The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles initially from the Harvard Women's Health Watch. This is the October issue of this journal. And the first article is entitled, Overdue for a Checkup? Letting too much time elapse between preventive care visits is risky. Here is how to get back on track. Sandra was deeply in denial. Diagnosed with high blood pressure in her 50s, she just didn't want to accept that she was among the 30 to 50% of Americans in her age range with this major risk factor for cardiovascular disease. Sandra stopped making medical appointments and eventually ran out of her blood pressure medication. But her refusal to seek regular medical care led to disastrous results. Sandra suffered a massive stroke. Now in her 80s, she walks with a limp while one of her arms is barely usable, says Dr. Daniel Sands, a primary care doctor at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. She's going to deal with the ramification of this for the rest of her life. Sandra fits into a small but significant group of Americans who eschew regular health evaluations. During the early part of the pandemic, more than 40% of Americans were forced to put off routine or even emergency care, according to the American Medical Association. But while most of those people flocked back after the global crisis eased, many still aren't getting the preventive care they should. About 12% of Americans are unsure when they'll schedule their next checkup, according to a 2024 national poll, and about 20% don't have a primary care doctor. Such lapses in care can have serious health implications, especially if, like nearly 4 in 10 Americans, you have at least one chronic condition, like high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, or obesity. Skipping regular medical care can increase the odds of potentially perilous consequences. Missing primary care appointments is linked with dying sooner, and the connection is even stronger for people with chronic mental health conditions, a study in BMC Medicine suggests. But older adults who'd had primary care in the year before they needed emergency surgery were less likely to die within 6 months of the operation compared to those who had not received primary care for more than a year. According to a study of 102,384 Medicare patients published online July 19, 2023 by JAMA Surgery, delaying care can translate to more wear and tear on the body from any uncontrolled threat, Dr. Sands says. But even if you don't have a chronic health problem, periodic checkups offer an opportunity to identify risk factors like smoking, alcohol use, lack of exercise, or poor sleep. They're also a chance to measure weight, blood pressure, and cholesterol, go over immunizations, and discuss cancer screening. Most of that stuff isn't urgent and can wait a year, Dr. Sands says. But I'm more concerned when people with conditions that need to be monitored, like diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity, stay away for a long time. Why do people stop scheduling checkups? A 2024 poll of 2,000 adults by U.S. News & World Report reveals a variety of common explanations from those who haven't seen their primary care doctor in more than a year. 32% said they keep forgetting or have been too busy. 25% said they just don't like going to the doctor. 10% said they felt judged or shamed by doctors in the past. Some people just fall off the cycle, and before they know it, 3, 4, or 5 years pass because their lives got busy or they were traveling a lot, Dr. Sands says. When they do finally schedule a checkup, it's often because they developed a problem they can't ignore, like back pain. Sometimes it takes an episode like that, he says, or they may have an unexpected death in the family, start looking at their own health, and realize they haven't seen their doctor in several years. Dr. Sands offers these tips to smooth the process of reestablishing primary care. Take stock. If you're still hesitating to make an appointment, examine your goals and how your health is integral to achieving them. Do you want to live a healthy life so you can play with your grandkids one day and not be winded or run a marathon, he asks. Write your goals down. Prepare for your visit. Since it's been a while, it's wise to jot down a list of health-related happenings or questions you've pondered in the years since your last appointment. Write down all the medications you're taking and what you're considering doing, like starting a special diet or taking a new supplement. If it's been more than a year or two since you've seen your primary care provider, you may find yourself waiting a long time for an appointment. In some communities, primary care physicians are scarce, and this adds to the difficulty in securing an appointment on short notice. If your doctor chides you for stalling, just own it, Dr. Sands advises. Say, I've had problems following up, but I'm here now to make a fresh start. And then there's an attached article which says, Seeking medical care online? Keep your doctor in the loop. The rise of online-only healthcare providers has made it possible to connect with clinicians without ever seeing them in person. But while only a fraction of older Americans are using these services, a significant portion of them haven't told their regular doctor that they're doing so, or that they've gotten a prescription this way, according to a new poll. Published in January 2024, the National Poll on Healthy Aging showed that 7.5% of people between 50 and 80 seek health care and prescriptions from an online-only company, many of which are widely marketed to people seeking treatments for skin problems, sexual health, and hair regrowth, but only one-third of them mentioned it to their health care provider. That revelation doesn't surprise Dr. Daniel Sands. People don't necessarily want their doctor to know they're seeking other sources of health care. And if they're accessing widely available medications, they may say, why do I need to tell my doctor? But the omission can pose serious implications. Direct-to-consumer services are inarguably convenient, but they also enable people to receive medical care and prescriptions from clinicians who aren't informed about their full health history and don't have access to their full medical records. Plus, there probably isn't adequate follow-up. These virtual practices might also not check for potentially dangerous interactions between the drugs they prescribe and others the patient got elsewhere. That's the biggest reason Dr. Sands recommends you come clean if you decide to use such a service. For these issues, I have no problem if you want to seek care elsewhere, he says, but you need to tell your doctor. It's important for us to know all the medications our patients are taking. And now here on the Women's Health Watch is a series of questions for Dr. Tony Golan, who is the editor-in-chief of the journal. And the first question is, after decades of drinking very little cocktail, I've started enjoying a nightly cocktail or two with a new neighbor. But my blood pressure was up the last checkup. Is there a connection? Yes. Mounting research has suggested that drinking moderately or heavily increases the risk of high blood pressure. For women, moderate drinking is defined as one drink a day. Heavy drinking is eight or more drinks per week. An October 2023 study in the journal Hypertension suggests that imbibing even one alcoholic beverage per day is linked to higher blood pressure than not drinking at all. Why does this happen? Drinking elevates our blood levels of a hormone called renin, which can cause blood vessels to narrow. This effect, combined with renin's ability to decrease our urine output, raises blood pressure. The more often one drinks, the more likely the habit will prod blood pressure readings beyond normal levels. The solution here is pretty simple. Drink less. Perhaps you and your neighbors can opt for mocktails instead, or substitute seltzer for one of your nightly drinks, and see your doctor in the next 2 months to make sure your blood pressure has returned to normal. Now here's another question for Dr. Tony Golan. I was alarmed to glance in the mirror this morning and find a bright red patch on the white part of my eye. What could have caused this? And the answer is, it sounds like you have a broken blood vessel in your eye, which is called a subconjunctival hemorrhage. Don't panic. As alarming as it looks, a subconjunctival hemorrhage usually isn't caused by anything serious and won't affect your vision. The problem often occurs with no obvious trauma to the eye. Even a strong cough or sneeze can cause a blood vessel just below the surface to break. Subconjunctival hemorrhage is also very common among people who wear contact lenses, who routinely place pressure on their eyeballs when putting lenses in or taking them out. If you have no symptoms other than a red spot, just carry on. It might take a week or two for the blood to dissipate. You can even keep wearing your contact lenses if you use them. But if you notice eye pain or change in your vision, your eye may be infected. Refrain from wearing contacts and see your doctor immediately. Now here's a very useful article, which is called Medication Perils. Certain over-the-counter drugs can pose more harm than good for older adults. And again, this is from the Harvard Women's Health Watch of October 2024. Whether we're reminded by the odd ache or pain, a few new wrinkles, or stronger eyeglasses, we're only too aware that our bodies don't work quite as efficiently as we continue to rack up birthdays. This shift also translates into how well the body absorbs or gets rid of the medications we may take for a host of physical or mental health conditions. Part of the process of aging is a natural slowing down of certain elimination pathways, says Gretchen Stern, a clinical pharmacist at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. That's why older adults may do better on lower doses of some medications and may be safer avoiding others entirely. Adults 65 and older use more over-the-counter drugs than any other age group. Half use such a product daily or weekly, while one quarter use a combination of 10 or more prescription and over-the-counter medications. Older adults are also 7 times more likely than younger people to experience an adverse drug event that lands them in the hospital, though 80% of such complications are preventable. Why are seniors more vulnerable to certain drugs as years pass? Well, they have more health problems. Nearly 95% of people 65 and older have at least one chronic condition, like arthritis, heart disease, or diabetes, and 80% have two or more. Their muscle mass declines. With less muscle and often a shift in fat distribution, medications can't travel toward or away from certain body areas as they would any younger person. They become more frail. Frailty isn't always easy to measure, but it typically includes a mix of muscle weakness, slowness while walking, unintentional weight loss, and exhaustion. Elderly people are more sensitive to drug side effects. Medications that are more easily tolerated by a younger person may sideline an older one with effects like insomnia, dizziness, drowsiness, headache, nausea, diarrhea, or constipation. Now, what over-the-counter medication should you reconsider if you're 65 or older? Stern points to 4 common examples and offers advice about better options. Make sure to discuss any potential medication changes with your doctor beforehand. The first medication is aspirin. This over-the-counter staple thins the blood, That is, it makes it less likely to clot. That might help lower the risk of heart attack or stroke, which is why low-dose aspirin is often prescribed for people with cardiovascular disease. But the risk of major bleeding problems increases with age. If you use aspirin as an occasional pain reliever and your liver function is normal, consider switching to acetaminophen or Tylenol. If you're taking aspirin to prevent cardiovascular complications, but you don't have a diagnosed heart disease, or you take another blood-thinning medication as well, talk to your doctor about whether it's safe to continue. Then there are non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, and these drugs are called NSAIDs. Widely used to treat arthritis, which affects more than half of American adults, 75 and older, these pain relievers, including Advil and Aleve, also pose a risk of bleeding, especially in the gastrointestinal tract. In addition, NSAIDs can contribute to kidney problems or to leg swelling in people with heart problems. If your liver function is normal, try acetaminophen or Tylenol instead. Topical NSAID creams and ointments can relieve pain from arthritis without being absorbed throughout the body. Another drug is proton pump inhibitors, or PPIs, often used long-term to treat acid reflux or gastroesophageal reflux, which is called GERD. Non-prescription PPIs include Prevacid, Nexium, and Prilosec. Since they alter the stomach's acidity, they can fuel bacterial infections that are often worse in older adults, like pneumonia. They can also decrease the amount of vitamin B12, vitamin D, and calcium absorbed from foods. And acids like calcium carbonate or Tums don't affect stomach acid production as much and can be taken as needed. Ask your doctor how you can modify your diet to alleviate acid reflux or if you can decrease your PPI dose. Finally, another medication to consider is diphenhydramine or Benadryl. This allergy reliever is also a popular sleep aid, but this and other so-called first-generation antihistamines like Dimetapp and chlortrimetan can cause confusion, delirium, dry mouth and eyes, constipation, blurred vision, and falls. For allergy symptoms, try a newer generation antihistamine like Zyrtec, Claritin, or Allegra. For insomnia, consider a melatonin supplement. That's a safer choice, Stern says. We're going to continue with the Harvard Women's Health Watch. And we're going to talk about two shorter articles. The first one is, regular walking can hamper low back pain recurrence. If your low back pain tends to return again and again, walking regularly may help stave off a repeat episode, a new study suggests. The analysis published online June 19, 2024 by The Lancet tracked 701 adults aged 54 on average, 81% of them women, all of whom had recently recovered from an episode of low back pain. Half were assigned to 6 months of an individualized physical therapist-guided walking program and education sessions, while the other half received no walking guidance. After tracking participants for 1 to 3 years, researchers found that the walking and education group had fewer occurrences of activity-limiting pain compared to the non-intervention group. They also went nearly twice as long before they had a recurrence of low back pain, an average of 208 days compared to 112 days. Researchers couldn't pinpoint why walking seemed to hamper back pain. They believe the benefits stem from a combination of factors, including movement, stress relief, and release of feel-good chemicals called endorphins. Now, another relevant study says chronic loneliness may raise stroke risk. Older adults who are chronically lonely are significantly more likely to suffer a stroke, a new Harvard-led analysis suggested. Published online June 24, 2024 by eClinical Medicine, the study evaluated data from 2006 through 2018 from nearly 12,200 people aged 50 and up. None of the participants had suffered a stroke before the study began. All answered questions from a standard test gauging loneliness, and about 9,000 participants answered the questions a second time 4 years later. Based on those answers, the researchers placed participants into four categories of loneliness: consistently low, remitting, which means scoring high at baseline and low at follow-up, recent onset, which means scoring low at baseline and high at follow-up, and consistently high, scoring high at both baseline and follow-up. And just to remind you, scoring high means that you have a high level of loneliness. Over 12 years of follow-up, 601 strokes were recorded among participants who had been surveyed about loneliness at two time periods. People categorized as consistently high in loneliness had 56% higher odds of having a stroke compared to those in the consistently low group, even after researchers accounted for other psychological factors like isolation and depression. However, participants in the remitting or recent onset loneliness groups did not show a pattern of higher stroke odds, suggesting that loneliness over the long term weighs more heavily on risk. Finally, another short article from the Women's Health Watch. Gratitude may help you to live longer. Having an attitude of gratitude may extend your years, a new Harvard-led analysis suggests. For the study, published online July 3, 2024, by JAMA Psychiatry, researchers examined data from more than 49,000 women, average age 79, enrolled in the Nurses' Health Study. In 2016, participants completed a six-item gratitude questionnaire in which they ranked their agreement with statements like, "I have so much in life to be thankful for," and "if I had to list everything I'm grateful for, it would be a very long list." 3 years later, the researchers checked participants' medical records to determine who had died, noting total deaths from all causes, as well as from specific causes like cardiovascular disease, cancer, respiratory disease, neurodegenerative disease, infection, and injury. Researchers found that participants whose gratitude questionnaire scores at the study's start were in the highest one-third had a 9% lower risk of dying over the following 3 years than participants who scored in the bottom one-third. Gratitude appeared protective against every specific cause of death studied, and most significantly against cardiovascular disease. The study was observational, meaning it couldn't prove that gratitude makes people live longer, only that there is an association. Now, here's an interesting article, "Common Infections Dark Side," Could it trigger Alzheimer's? Being infected with Helicobacter pylori, a stomach bacterium found in an estimated two-thirds of the world's population, may be linked to an increased risk of Alzheimer's disease in people 50 and older. Passed from one person to another, H. pylori is often harmless, but it can lead to indigestions, ulcers, and stomach cancer. Alzheimer's may join that list. According to an article in the March 2024 issue of Alzheimer's and Dementia, researchers analyzed medical records of over three decades from 4.2 million people in the United Kingdom aged 50 and up. None of the participants had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's at the study's start. People with symptomatic H. pylori infection had 11% higher odds of developing Alzheimer's disease over an average follow-up period of 11 years. The findings are only observational and don't prove that H. pylori causes dementia, but the possibility doesn't surprise Dr. Andrew Budson, a lecturer in neurology at Harvard Medical School. We've known for more than 10 years that other infections are also associated with a higher risk of Alzheimer's, he says. Research increasingly suggests that beta amyloid, a type of protein involved in Alzheimer's-related brain plaques, is normally deposited in the brain to help to fight off infection. But some people, due to genetic or other factors, aren't able to clear this protein out of the brain after the threat has passed. Over a lifetime, people sometimes generate too much amyloid or have trouble clearing it away. When too much of it builds up, that's what leads to Alzheimer's. Well, looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.